Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. Welcome to March Madness. CBS Sports' John Rothstein broke down Selection Sunday and the bracket like the absolute boss that he is. I also spoke with Wright State's Scott Nagy and UNC Greensboro's Wes Miller as they get ready for the big dance. Eldrick was in contention on Sunday, and I'll give you my take on if the cat is back. And yes, clones, it was Monday, and I was on the air. And if I had a take on the O.J. Simpson special last night, I would have given it to you. The Daily Jungle starts right now. The bracket is out. You've probably gone through about 14 different versions of your Final Four already. But here are the basics. Virginia is number one overall. Villanova, Kansas, Xavier, the other number ones. And there are storylines everywhere. Lipscomb making its first trip. The March legend, Ron Hunter, and Georgia State making their return. Both Hurleys, Bobby and Dan, taking their respective teams to the big dance. In fact, nobody did the celebration quite like Bobby Hurley and Arizona State. The Sun Devils were watching at Hurley's home when their name was announced, and then they went total pool party.
Let's start with the Crimson Tide of Alabama. Coach Avery Johnson gets the Tide back into the tournament for the first time since 2000.
Best part of that celebration is not the fact that they jumped around and then jumped into a pool. If you watch it, and it's great, it's Bobby Hurley exploding out of his chair before Greg Gumbel could even say Arizona State's name. Dude still has those cat-like reflexes that made him a college hoops legend. And while the Sun Devils may have broken with tradition by taking their party to the pool, a few traditions still remain. Like somebody not getting in, who deserved to get in, and somebody getting in who didn't. Like somebody getting hammered hard. Take Syracuse and Notre Dame. The Q's got in, Notre Dame got jammed, even though the Irish beat the Orange in their house when Notre Dame was without two of their best players. And still, they don't get in. And of course, the biggest storyline of the college season popped up on Selection Sunday as USC, Louisville, and Oklahoma State, all part of the FBI investigation, and USC, Louisville, and Oklahoma State all miss out on the tournament. The committee says those three not getting in had nothing to do with the investigation. Maybe not. And maybe it did. Probably. I mean, hard to imagine it had nothing to do with it. Just because it was not discussed doesn't mean it didn't have an impact on their thought process. Of course, it wasn't discussed in the room, but it didn't need to be. And it really didn't have nothing at all to do with those three being left out, right? I mean, even if it did, even if it had nothing at all to do with the three of them being left out, it just seems a bit odd. It really does. Like, it seems a bit odd that Arizona and Auburn, two other programs who are a part of the FBI investigation, just happen to end up with lower seeds than you would expect from them. Again, the committee would tell you they never once talked about it. And I do believe that. Just because I don't know how that conversation would go. How would they talk about that? Or that they would even need a conversation in the first place. Some things don't need to be talked about. And as long as you've got your conspiracy hat on, John Calipari would like a word. Because it would not be Selection Sunday if Cal didn't feel like he got screwed by the selection committee. And you know what? He's right almost every single time. I mean, the guy does complain about it like every single year, and he's almost right every single time. Kentucky just won the SEC tournament on a run where they beat Alabama and they beat Tennessee. And what do they get for that? A 5 seed in the brutal South, a matchup with Davidson in the first round, with Arizona and Virginia likely after that. So as you might imagine, Cal's got questions, lots of questions. For instance, quote, how did Arizona drop to a 4? Didn't they win their tournament? Did Davidson win their tournament? Did Virginia win their tournament? Oh, wow. Did we win our tournament? Wow. End of quote. He's got a point, right? And it gets worse. Cal was laying it on pretty thick. And I got to admit, I love it. Quote, is ours like the toughest again? like, by far. Is anyone in here surprised? We're not playing on Thursday, right? Because we just got done playing today. Oh, we're playing on Thursday. Oh, but we're close. Reporter then says, they're in Boise. Cal goes on, quote, Anchorage or Boise? It is what it is. They're not going to make it easy for us, and they can all say this is all by the numbers and all that. Okay, end quote. And of course, when Cal says it's okay, best know he's not okay with it. Used to it, but not okay with it. Not when he feels like it happens to him and the BBN every single year. Again, I'm not saying that the committee is out to get Cal, but the guy does make a pretty compelling case. And the way he has his team playing right now, they could make some noise, or could have, if they hadn't been pushed into such a brutal region. And as Cal would be the first to tell you, as he does every single year, when you misseed someone, it's not just the misseeded team that gets hurt, it's the team that has to play the misseeded team that gets screwed as well. John Rothstein is my guest. John, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Jim, happy holidays. Best day of the year.
You too, John. I was going to say, there's no way the brackets come out, and I'm not talking to you. You always bring the energy, but now that it's March, we've got the brackets. The first four go tomorrow night. They start tomorrow night. How is life for John Rothstein right now?
You kind of feel like a CPA on April 14th. That's the best way I can describe it.
It makes sense to me. All right, so there are going to be complaints, John, every single year about the job the selection committee does, not just about who's in and who's out, but also teams and where they're seated and where they're sent. Overall, what do you make of the job that the committee did this time?
Mediocre at best. You know, it baffles me, Jim. Virginia is the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, and all of a sudden, Virginia is put into a situation where you have Arizona or Kentucky looming in the Sweet 16. And beyond that, just the fact that Arizona and Kentucky have to be in a round of 32 game is a miscarriage of justice. I look at this region for Virginia, and I don't understand how they're the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. And I look at this region, Virginia coached by Tony Bennett, Cincinnati coached by Mick Cronin, Tennessee and a blue-collar team under Rick Barnes, and of course, the aforementioned Kentucky and Arizona teams coached by John Calipari and Sean Miller, respectively. That region, the South region, is the region of grit.
Yeah, it is. In fact, as long as you mention that, and that being what that is, you don't just break down the bracket, you break down the regions. You label them, and there's one right there. So before we go any further on the regions themselves, when you look at the bracket, what are you labeling each region?
Well, below that, on the left side of your bracket, below the region of grit, I see a region that's wide open in the West. Xavier's never been a number one seed before in the NCAA tournament. North Carolina is not vintage North Carolina because they're not playing their traditional dual post look with Roy Williams. And then you have a three seed in Michigan who played well late in the Big Ten tournament, but you also have capable seeds at the four in the five range with Gonzaga and Ohio State. And by the way, Michael Porter Jr. and Missouri, a capable team without the future lottery pick, is an eight seed. I see a region of balance. We shift now to the right side of your bracket and look up top for Villanova and Jay Wright. What do I see in this region, the East region? Great point guards. Jalen Brunson at Villanova. Texas Tech has Keenan Evans. And then what can you say, obviously, about West Virginia's Javon Carter and Wichita State's Landry Shamet, as well as what we're going to have in the play-in game in the first four in that region with St. Bonaventure's Jalen Adams against UCLA's Aaron Holiday, pound for pound, inch for inch, maybe the least appreciated player in college basketball. I look at the East region, I see the region of stewardship, and then when we look below to round things out, Kansas, Duke, Michigan State in the Midwest, your 1, 2, and 3 seeds, this is a region of royalty.
John Rothstein breaking it all down. John, go back to Xavier for a minute. When you look at Xavier, they're number one seed in the West. How good is this team? And what's it say about the job that Chris...
The job in Xavier that guys like Pete Gillen, Thad Matta, and Sean Miller used as a stepping stone, and he has made it a destination job. Chris Mack has done as good of a job as any coach in realignment in terms of a team moving up to a different level. And for me, when I look at this Xavier team, I see a team that's one of the few that has a chance to win a national championship. We know, obviously, about known commodities this time of year, and you're going to know about Trayvon Blewett, and you're going to know about J.P. McCura. But for Xavier to get to a Final Four, they need Quentin Gooden, their sophomore point guard, to play his best when it matters most. If you're looking for an X to mark the spot, Jim, it's Quentin Gooden.
Clones, let me talk to you for a moment about my bookie. It's time for me to talk to you about the boatload of money that you can make this week betting at my bookie. Now, if you've not checked these out, this is the perfect time to get into the action. You can join thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Look, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Join MyBookie right now. This is why you want to make your way to MyBookie, because you win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anyplace else. They even have in-game live betting, so you can even place a bet after tip-off. So join right now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can even enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. Use the promo code JUNGLE to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie today, and remember, promo code JUNGLE. Play, win, and get paid. Visit MyBookie today, promo code JUNGLE. That's MyBookie. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. We're talking to John Rothstein. John, when you mentioned teams that can win it all, what do you think about Arizona? They're a four in that brutal region, but they won the Pac-12 regular season and the conference title. And when you look at the way DeAndre Ayton's playing right now, does that feel like a Final Four team to you?
DeAndre Ayton is the best player in the 2018 NCAA tournament. And when you look at what DeAndre Ayton is doing right now, it is really work of somebody who is less than a god, but more than a man. He is a college freshman, and he is making mincemeat out of his competition. And tough situations can often be the incubators of great turnarounds. It's been well documented what Arizona's program has went through. And Sean Miller came out a couple of weeks ago and said that next season, Alonzo Trier, DeAndre Ayton, and Rolly Hawkins will not be back at Arizona. Arizona's future in terms of its prospective recruits is very much in question because of all the decommitments we've seen over the last couple of weeks. I like Arizona on the heels of the best player in the 2018 NCAA tournament, DeAndre Ayton, to work their way through the region of grit and advance to San Antonio. And, Jim, you know, you're a movie guy. We have talked pop culture, obviously, through the years, through all the years doing this. There was a scene in Rocky III when Rocky was broken and battered, and Apollo takes him to train out west, and he says, you see that look in their eyes, Rock? Eye of the tiger, man. Eye of the tiger. I haven't seen a look that really resembled what we saw in that scene in Rocky III till I saw Sean Miller's press conference notifying the world that he was going to remain Arizona's head coach. Eye of the tiger? We're going to find out over the next 3 weeks.
Eye of the tiger. He was defiant that day, wasn't he, John? He was defiant. Before I let you go, let me get you a look at the East region for a minute. And that number one seed, Villanova, that you mentioned, they've got all these weapons. They've got a number of different ways they can hurt you offensively. So what would Jay Wright's biggest concern be heading into that region?
The round of 32. And the round of 32 was the hurdle for Villanova in 2014 when it lost to UConn and Shabazz Napier. It was the hurdle in 2015 when it lost to NC State. And obviously it was the hurdle last year when it got picked off by Nigel Hayes in Wisconsin. If Villanova can get by the round of 32, and I think it will be a matchup with Alabama, even though Alabama-Virginia Tech is a 50-50 game, because as you know, Jim, Buzz Williams' team doesn't have 50-50 balls. They have 80-20 balls. But that game is the game that's Villanova's biggest hurdle. If Villanova gets to the round of 32, I'd like them to get back to a Final Four.
Right, John, who is a mid-major that maybe you've got your eye on? Possibly somebody who's a little off the national radar who might make some noise in the tournament.
New Mexico State under Chris Jans, a rising star in coaching. High major wins this year over Miami and Illinois. And also one of the more unique players in college basketball in 6'5", under Mario Jones. 6'5", Jim, but five games this season with 20 rebounds or more. You want to roll the dice in your bracket? Take the Aggies to the Sweet 16. I have a meeting up with Kansas in the round of 16 and, of course, the region of royalty.
In fact, I could hit you with 50 more things, John, but right about what about your Final Four before you go? Who do you have in that Final Four?
Arizona out of the region of grit, Michigan out of the region of balance, Villanova out of the region of stewardship, and then I'm going to go with Tom Izzo and Michigan State out of the region of royalty, and then in the national championship game, Tom Izzo, 18 years after winning his first, will beat Arizona, Michigan State over Arizona for the 2018 national title.
Yes, it's Monday. Yes, it's the Monday after Fox aired the OJ special. And yes, I am here. Yes, I did say there was a chance that I would not be here the day after the OJ special aired, because I know a very small percentage of you morons would be looking to hijack the show. And I'm not having that. I'm sure as hell not having that the day after Selection Sunday. I'm not having that. Because I knew a very small percentage of you would look to hijack the show with your equally imbecilic takes on OJ and his confession. But that never really was a reality. You're not going to run me off my own show. You're not going to run me off my show with your horrible resets and horrible takes. If that were the case, that would have happened. Right around the time he beat that rap. Remember, though, this is my talk show, not yours. I know many of you think you made me. And certainly, a number of you do have a part in me being where I am right now. But you didn't make me, and it's not your show. My show, not yours. My name on the marquee. My name on the parking spot out front. These are my 3 hours to host. And no amount of garbage tweets and deplorable phone calls are going to keep me from doing my job. Yes, I said there was a chance that I wouldn't come in the Monday after that show aired. But you didn't really take that seriously, did you? Did you really think you were going to run me off my own show? Clones, I understand that you're meat drunk, after Fox lobbed you that giant filet last night. But I'm dead sober, and I'm a vegetarian. I'm doing my show, and I'm going to move on from something that happened way back in 94, even if you're not. However, hypothetically, regarding OJ's, if I did it, if I had a take, if I had a take, here is what I would say if I had a take on the if I did it special last night. If I had a take. First off, this is very, very difficult for me to do. I mean, these takes, if I had one, are purely hypothetical.
Hypothetical.
I want to make sure that that's known up front. So OJ does not hypothetically try to slice me for what I'm about to say. But if I had a take on if I did it, I would start by saying how pissed I was that Fox milked this thing for 2 freaking hours. 2 hours on, if I had a take, 2 hours on a Sunday night starting at 8 p.m. Yeah, I guess when an old interview with America's favorite double murderer collects 12 years of dust, I guess you got to get your mileage right, right? If I had a take, I'd suggest that. Oh, but they got their mileage all right, because the first hour of that interview rehashed nothing but old information, if I saw it, that is. And I had a take. And nothing but old information that you already knew about, heard about, knew from the 90s, or if you're late to it, maybe the FX miniseries, or all 6 of the ESPN docs, or anytime OJ comes up. Nothing new there. Nothing to uncover. And they're just milking this thing. Am I the only one who has OJ Simpson fatigue? Or in the very least, remembers this guy's story? How many times, if I had a take, how many times does this dude need to be reset? There's not a person alive right now that doesn't know this guy's background, doesn't know what happened, doesn't know the story. And if there is, they were in bed long before 8 p.m. last night. Except now it's 9 o'clock. Skip ahead, if I had a take. Now it's 9 o'clock and I've learned nothing that I didn't already know. And on a day where we already lost an hour in the morning, now we lost a second one too. Now we're chasing 2 hours. And then finally, after 12 years and an hour, Fox pays it all off. They pay off the tees and they roll 6 uninterrupted minutes from the interview where OJ cops to killing Ron and Nicole, albeit hypothetically. And if I had a take, I would play about 1.5 minutes of those 6 minutes for you, if I had a take.
As things got heated, I just remember Nicole fell and hurt herself. And this guy kind of got into a karate thing. And I said, well, you think you can kick my ass? And I remember I grabbed a knife. I do remember that portion, taking a knife from Charlie. And to be honest, after that, I don't remember, except I'm standing there and there's all kind of stuff around and...
What kind of stuff?
Butt and stuff around. You know, I hate to say this, but this is not about alcohol. I'm sorry. I know we got to back up again.
Right. That's okay. I want to back
this
up.
This is hard.
This is hard. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I want to back up
to... It's hard to try to make people think that I'm...
I know. You write about removing a glove before taking the knife from Charlie.
I had no conscious memory of doing that, but obviously I must have because they found a glove there.
And blacking out. Have you ever blacked out before?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
Of course, if something like this would take place in anybody's life, if it were to happen, I would imagine it's something that you would probably automatically have trouble wrapping your mind around it. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible.
Credit Fox for that. Can you give me 1 second so I can talk to you about Burrow Furniture? Handcrafted in the USA, Burrow makes luxury couches for real life. Burrow is the same quality that you would expect from high-end retailers without breaking the bank. Plus, everything is customizable. Pick your size, color, and armrest height to get the couch that's perfect for you. And there's a built-in USB charger for when your devices are in the red. Say goodbye to that extra long charge cord. Enjoy 30 days of naps on your Burrow risk-free. And if for any reason you choose not to keep it, the return process is simple. Go try a Burrow couch for yourself. Order today. It will ship in a jiffy. Use the promo code Rome at burrow.com and get $50 off your order. That's burrow.com. Offer code Rome in all caps. Once again, burrow.com. Offer code Rome. Make sure it's in all caps. That's Burrow. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. So if you're thinking you just heard a confession, you did. Because innocent people do not hypothetically recall a double murder that they were falsely accused of. Innocent people would actually do the exact opposite. Innocent people would tell you how and why they didn't do it. Innocent people would tell you how and why they didn't do it, not how and why they did do it. So if in fact I did have a take, I would tell you that's a confession. I thought so. The panel Fox had on during the special thought so. Twitter thought so. The unanimous take nationwide is that was a confession. So what does that change? Does that change anything at all? Of course not. We all knew what this guy did. We all knew who he offed before last night. And we all know nothing's going to happen to him 24 years after he beat that rap, 12 years after he copped to it, hypothetically. So it's all for nothing. Just another example of how deranged and detached from reality he really was and still is. I mean, did you listen to what he had to say? Did you hear how he said it? And there were even more examples, like when he actually tried to convince the viewer that Ron and Nicole were not the victims, that he was.
Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me. Who I was attacked and murdered also in that short period of time. And once again, I to this day, it bugs me that it seems that people wanted me to be guilty. That really, really bothered me.
I mean, how hard do you have to work? How hard would you have to look, work, search to find a more unbelievable statement than that? Credit Fox for that. Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me.
Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me.
So OJ hypothetically kills them, but I guess they metaphorically killed him. Exactly what part of you, yeah, I mean, he said a piece of me died. Like, exactly what part of you died when their domes were rolling down Rockingham? Part of you died? Yeah, that's great because all of them died. They're dead, Juice. Completely dead. Not partly dead. Fully dead. Exactly what part of him died when those two got butchered? Like, he said it like a part of them, or they murdered a part of him.
Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me.
How? almost like those two killed me. You know why they didn't kill you? Because they were already dead. And this whole thing, it's already the weirdest thing ever. If I had a take, I would say it was already the weirdest thing ever. But they ain't talked about the Bronco chase and his big takeaway from the most famous low-speed pursuit in the history of mankind.
I'm in the back of the, still in the back of the truck, and I can't believe what I'm seeing. Because as every time we go by intersections, it was like, where did these people get the time to make these signs? Go OJ and stuff. And what was strange is I was being depicted as a fugitive on the radio, but from the side of the roads, it was more people cheering.
So this guy's lasting memory, his biggest takeaway and lasting memory from that Bronco chase was looking out the window and seeing people cheering, but wondering how they had the time to make the signs rooting him on. Not that there were two people butchered, but rather there were idiots waving their bed sheets with his name on them from the overpasses. That's his takeaway from that low-speed pursuit. Hey, I've said this 1,000 times. I might as well make it 1,001. This dude's addicted to fame. He's addicted to attention. So much so that he would even sit down in front of a camera to hypothetically confess to a double murder, which he has long said he did not commit.
Hypothetical.
So much so that he'd actually say that Ron and Nicole really killed him and not the other way around. So much so that his biggest recollection of the chase was seeing people cheering for him and wondering how they had the time to make the signs. I mean, he probably watched it last night and loved it. Loved seeing himself on camera, thought he looked great, thought he came off great, thought he sounded great, probably wondered how he could schedule a follow-up sit-down for today. Just as I'm sure many of you love that special as well and are loving me or loving writing me all these tweets and emails that I'm just not going to read. I mean, that special last night was everything that I knew, well, would have been everything that I knew it was going to be if I had a take. Gratuitous, unnecessary, and a colossal waste of time. Which is a perfect way to describe your love for the quarter-century-old story that simply will not die. For the last time. He did it. He got away with it. Can we please move on and stop talking about it? That's my take. Or it would be if I had a take. If I had a take, hypothetically, that would be my take. Scott Nagy is my guest. Scott, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. Listen, you knew going into Selection Sunday that you probably were going to have a pretty high seed, Scott, and to be matched up with one of the best teams in the country. So what was your reaction when you saw that you'd be facing the 3-seed Tennessee in the South region?
Yeah, we knew we were going to get one of the top 8 to 12 teams in the country. And, I mean, not excited to see any of those names called. I didn't know a lot about Tennessee, but just looking at them, they're really good defensively, super physical on both ends. I mean, a really physical basketball team, and obviously had an unbelievable year in the SEC.
We're talking to Scott Nagy, the head basketball coach at Wright State. You know, it's your program's first trip to the tournament in more than a decade, but you've been there before as the head coach at South Dakota State. So what do you take from the previous trips that you can apply to this one? And then how do you go about preparing your players for what lies ahead?
Well, yeah, when you have players that have never been in it, it can be overwhelming, you know, because there's just so much attention that goes around it that you're not used to. And particularly at Wright State, you know, these kids just aren't used to all the media attention. And some of it's fun, and the kids have earned it. They've worked hard, but some of it can be overwhelming. So just trying to help them get through that, get all their families worked out, tickets, those kind of things, so that we can focus. But the NCAA tournament, it's a great experience, but like you said, I've been there 3 other times and have not been able to win a game, and so it's just not that much fun to win and go home right away, and so that's what we've been talking to the guys about.
Now, Scott, in addition to that, it has not been an easy season by any stretch, and to that point, I want to go back to the offseason and talk about Ryan Custer for a moment. For those who do not know, he showed promise as a freshman last season. He had a chance to start this year, and then in the offseason, he suffered a severe spinal cord injury in an accident at a pool. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
I tell you, Jim, it set our team back about a month. I mean, just kind of knocked us off our feet. He's just such an integral part of our team, not only as a player, but as a teammate and a comrade. I mean, he's just such a good friend to the guys. And, you know, we've not lost any of that, but he's not around us like he used to be around us. And so it really set us back. And it hurt our basketball team this year, particularly early, and then we made the adjustment. But it was a very difficult thing for everybody to deal with.
I mean, Scott, how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you go about handling an injury with your players, that injury, from an emotional and psychological standpoint?
Well, there's certainly no book on it. And you talk to your guys about life all the time, and sometimes, you know, things happen that you really didn't do anything to make a bad thing happen. And this is a freak deal that happened. And so the question is, how do you respond to it? Now, Ryan has responded to it incredibly. I mean, we've all been so encouraged. You know, it certainly helps our players work through the pressures of being a Division I basketball player. When you can refer to what Ryan's had to go through, then it makes playing basketball and the pressures of being a Division I college athlete very easy. And so to have him around us, we were so fortunate to have him around us at our tournament. He was able to travel with us and be at all the team meetings and things like that. It was just a wonderful experience for Ryan, and it was even better for our team.
Scott Nagy joining us. So final thought on that, because he's there and he's been at the end of the bench and he's with the team. It seems to me you go through something like that, and that could really, really rattle some players, or maybe somehow, some way. And I'm not sure how, but maybe it can bond them. Maybe it can galvanize them somehow. What do you make of the way you guys have responded to that situation?
Yeah, I think it has galvanized us. You know, like I said before, you know, he's just shown so much courage through this deal, and his family's shown so much courage that it's really bolstered all of ours. It just has helped everybody deal with any of the other situations they have going on in their life, because obviously this is a very difficult one. And We've been super proud of him, and we're excited that he gets to go with us to Dallas. So it should be a good experience for him.
So I know you're there to win, Scott, but the fact of the matter is, when you look at everything your team has gone through since the end of last season, how proud are you of the fact that you're now in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, I mean, it overwhelms me, honestly, to see what these guys have done. I mean, we primarily play seven guys, and three of those guys are freshmen. We lost a senior halfway through the season, and it just has been how these guys have responded, you know, in the midst of all of this has been incredible. And I don't enjoy every season. I mean, coaching's a tough deal, and there's a lot of stress that goes with it, but I've really enjoyed this season.
Yeah, it's interesting. Coaching is a tough deal, and I think that's a really honest and candid response that I don't enjoy every single season. As an example, your father, Dick, was a longtime college coach. He says that back in the day, he did everything he could to keep you from coaching. So how did you end up in coaching?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where you just grow up around it, and it's what you know. And I think you look at a lot of sons, and they either grow up and do what their dad did, or they get as far away from it as they can. I played college basketball, and I naturally went, you know, right into being a graduate assistant in Illinois. I was very fortunate to be on some, help coach some good teams there. And so, yeah, he tried very hard to talk me out. He's still, you know, I'm 51 years old, and he's still trying to talk me out. So,
great.
Yeah,
I mean, Scott, he said, quote, "I prayed he wouldn't go into coaching. I knew all the pitfalls, all the pressure, how tough it can be, and you don't want to see your kids suffer like that." I mean, did you know how badly he wanted you to do anything other than coach?
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. He tried a lot of times to talk me out of it, because he understood me, he understood the business. But you know what? In every business, in anything that you're going through, there's pressure. You have to produce, or, you know, you're just not going to do well. Obviously, you know, in coaching, when things don't go well, everybody knows about it, where in some other professions that's not the case. But it's what I knew. It's what I knew, and I followed my heart. You know, and I think even now some more, it's just hard for my dad just to watch me go through it. And so he just constantly struggles with it. But, you know, I'm just glad I followed my heart.
Yeah, but he's right there with you, though. He's a regular at your games. So what's it like having him in the stands and sometimes giving an earful to the refs?
Yeah, well, that's great to have him there. I love to have his support and making the move from South Dakota State to Wright State. He's just a lot closer to us, and so I get to see him more, which is great. He's very intense. He knows a lot of the referees, and so he gets after them and calls them by name. And You know, he gets after my players, but, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I really wouldn't. I'm thrilled to have my dad around and around the program, and, you know, he gets to give some of his wisdom to the players as well.
Hey, Scott, if he's getting after the refs and he's getting after the players, I can go ahead and assume that he's getting after his kids still too, his son?
No, he honestly doesn't. He doesn't ever try to give me advice. He watches it, and he tells me how proud of me that you know, how proud he is of me, and he's really never tried to give me any coaching advice.
Scott Nagy, my guest. We're joined by him for a few more moments. You know, you talked about the move you made. So again, you went into coaching, you start out as an assistant in Illinois, then you go to South Dakota State, and then you take over as head coach at South Dakota State. You built a great program there in the transition from Division II to Division I, and then five straight trips to the postseason tournaments, and you had a great thing going there, and it would have made sense for you to stay there a long, long time. So what was the opportunity at Wright State that made you feel like this was something that you did want to take on?
I'll tell you, Jim, obviously the toughest decision of my life, because you're right, I could have probably stayed at South Coast State, retired, you know, and done very well, because we did build a good program there, and they, you know, they've continued it. But I just, every door that could be open was open for me to come to Wright State. And as hard as the decision was for me, I went ahead and made it. It was obviously a tough decision for my family, because all they knew was South Dakota. And every time I say that, then I'm saying, you know, I'm glad we moved, because I would like my kids to know more than just South Dakota. And so, but our kids have adapted well. Last year was not easy, you know, just making that adjustment that first year. But this year, I really just looked forward you know, just have enjoyed this team, and recruiting is going well. And so, you know, we just kind of started it here now.
So a final thought, as you start to look at film on Tennessee, what concerns you the most about Rick Barnes's team?
Well, like I said before, their physicality. You know, we've not faced a team at our level that is as big and as strong as they are. And they're young. We're a very young team. We're probably younger than they are, but they're still very young. I mean, they're going to be tremendous next year. But they're very physical. They really pound the ball inside. I think, you know, we've got to do a good job of being able to just not foul them, because I don't want to see them on a free throw line. Tremendous free throw shooting team. We certainly, and they're physical on both ends. They're physical defensively, one of the best defensive teams in the country, but they're also physical offense.
Wes Miller is my guest. Wes, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Wes, it is great to have you on. I was looking forward to it, because this is the first time that UNCG has been to the tournament, as I mentioned, Wes, since 2001. Most of your players were toddlers back then. So what's it mean to lead this program back to the tournament for the first time in such a long time?
Yeah, you mentioned it, 17 years, and we've been here seven as a staff. It's taken a lot longer than we would have liked, but it means the world, Jim. I mean, we've had great support, you know, the last 7 years here, but to see the way it's grown in the last two, and then really specifically in the last 7 days since we got that automatic berth to the tournament, it's just been really neat, man. It feels like the whole community on campus, the whole city of Greensboro, even just people in the state of North Carolina have really wrapped their arms around us. So it's been a great feeling.
Yeah, that's the best. That is so exciting for a program that hasn't had it in so long, and for the students and the fans of the program to get a chance to do something like this is great. And then what's your reward? Of course, Wes, your reward is you get to go up against Mark Few and Gonzaga. What was your reaction when you saw your name matched up with their name?
Yeah, well, you mentioned that reward, Gonzaga. They're pretty good. No, we won the conference final 7 days ago. And so, you know, we've been kind of sitting there waiting for a week, and I think we were just really excited to find out who went and where, you know. And so the initial reaction, we were just excited to know where we were going, know who we were playing, and the guys were kind of overcome with emotion. You know, deep down, I think they all wanted to go to San Diego because they thought we'd be, like, on the beach or something.
Right.
And so I don't know if they understood, you know, how neat it is to go to Boise, because it'll be, you know, great fans and it'll be a great atmosphere there. But, no, they were just excited to figure out where they're going. What we found out, Jim, in the last 12 or 14 hours is our staff, you know, kind of dove into Gonzaga. We knew we'd play somebody great, and we know Gonzaga's a great program. We're really familiar with, you know, Gonzaga. They're a household name. But we've really figured out why, as we started breaking down the tape. They are tremendous, and this will be a big-time challenge for us.
Wes Miller, my guest. Wes, you're one step ahead of me. I was going to say that you've said that you're the kind of guy that when you're not sleeping, you're watching basketball. And Gonzaga, of course, has been on TV quite a bit this year, and especially late at night. So you've seen a little of them already. You've been breaking down tape. What concerns you the most about facing them?
You know, just how consistent they are. You know, they have great players. You know, obviously they're just so well coached and so well organized. But on both ends of the ball, and I mean, like, we're trying to find weaknesses. We can't really find any. They're just so consistent on both sides of the ball. I think they're maybe I'm wrong here, but I think I read something that they're maybe the only team in the country that's in the top 20 in the nation in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And I think that just kind of shows you they're just a really, really solid basketball team that's well coached and has great players. So we'd like to find some chinks in their armor, but it's been tough to find any yet.
UNCG headed back to the NCAA tournament. Head coach Wes Miller joining us. You know, at the same time, as good as they are, Wes, you've got one of the best defensive teams in the country in terms of scoring defense and defending against the three. So how would you describe your team's approach on the defensive end?
Yeah, we've tried to build an identity around that end of the floor for some time now. This team's done the best job of any team I've had of really buying into that on a day-to-day basis. We're still not quite as consistent as I'd like us to be, but that's been what we've hung our hat on. And we went to our conference tournament, and the SoCon was great this year. We were fortunate to win 3 games in 3 days, and we didn't actually play very well offensively. You know, the ball wasn't going in. We weren't in a great rhythm. But I thought it was a little poetic that we were still able to come out and win it because we were so good defensively throughout the tournament. That's something we're going to have to do on Thursday when we play Gonzaga. You know, again, we realize that we'll be underdogs, but we've been a team that's going to kind of hung our hat on that end of the floor all year. We're going to come out swinging on both ends, but hopefully our pressure can bother them a little bit because it has been able to bother people this year. We've been successful.
You know, Wes, the thing is, and when you have not been there before, the whole thing can be so overwhelming for a young player. And you've been through the tournament experience as a player, which I'll get into in a moment, but you know how special it is. So how do you go about getting the right balance and making sure that your guys enjoy every single moment, because that's as good as it gets. But at the same time, you want to make sure they put themselves in the best position to make the experience last more than just one game, if possible.
Well, we've been saying just that to them. Let's enjoy every moment of this. This is a lifetime experience. And, you know, I was fortunate to play in the tournament, you know, over a decade ago. And I remember that stuff like it was yesterday. And I really value those memories. I want our guys to have those same memories down the road in their lives. And I want them to enjoy this. But we've really tried to get them to continue to be who we've been to this point every day on the practice court. And that's been a team that's really tried to come in and just improve one day at a time. I know it sounds cliche, but that's something that it's a big banner on our wall, one at a time. We've tried to stay focused and stay really tightly focused to the task at hand or between the lines, but also let them enjoy it. That's a tightrope to walk. We're trying to do it the best we can. But as you mentioned, this is the first time, you know, our players are going through this, and the first time our staff's going through this as coaches.
UNCG head coach Wes Miller joining us. But again, you've been there before. You know, you were the youngest head coach in Division I when you were hired. You're still really young. But how different are you now as a coach than when you first took over?
Well, a lot. I tell people we struggled in the early years here. And, you know, I think like anything, I thought I knew what I was doing. I know now that I didn't. I think the only difference between now and then is I still don't know what I'm doing, but at least I'm a little bit more aware of it, you know.
Right.
Because it's just coaching's like anything. It's a constant learning process and a constant growing process. And I thought it was easy when I first got going. I got humbled pretty easily. But, no, we've evolved a ton as a staff and as a program in every facet, how we recruit, you know, how our style of play, the things that we value. And so that's been a constant development process here, and I hope that never changes.
I think that's a great answer, Wes. I still don't know what I'm doing, but I'm more aware of it, and I understand exactly where you're going with that. Now, you played your college ball at North Carolina, but the journey there is the stuff of legends because you grew up watching the Tar Heels on Raycom, and then you played high school ball at New Hampton, but you ended up going to James Madison as a freshman, and then after that first season, you and your father met with Roy Williams. What do you remember about that conversation?
One thing really specifically, because I was unsure whether, I was a scholarship player my freshman year at JMU, and I was a little uneasy about transferring to North Carolina because I was going to be a walk-on, and I knew it would be very difficult to play because, I couldn't play a lick. I mean, I thought I could at the time, but I couldn't play a lick. And the one thing that kind of got me over the hump was Coach Williams asked me what I wanted to do when I was done playing. I knew I wanted to coach since I was a baby, and he convinced me that it would be the best thing for me beyond college to get into coaching and prepare me for coaching to be a player at North Carolina. And that was the single reason, you know, that I got over the hump and made the decision to go there. And boy, was he right, because that decision's impacted me, not just in basketball and in coaching, but in life. And he's been an unbelievable mentor among a number of other Carolina guys that have kind of wrapped their arms around me.
You know, it's a really interesting story, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, you could play a lick. You probably could have played a big role at JMU, but I understand now when you tell that story why you would give up that opportunity for another one. In fact, you were part of the 2005 National Championship team at North Carolina. You were a captain on the 07 team that won the ACC title. So when you look back on your time at Chapel Hill, what does stick out the most?
You know, great relationships and great friendships first. You know, I was fortunate to be, like you just mentioned, I was on some unbelievable teams and around some great players. And I had one of those storybook college experiences because, like I said, I went there as a walk-on. And then my junior year, I look up and I'm starting and kind of pinching yourself because, as you mentioned, I grew up in the state of North Carolina. You know, I idolized ACC basketball and college basketball. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm out there playing in it. So, no, I had an unbelievable experience there, Jim. But, you know, looking back on it, what I value most is my friendships with the coaches that were there, my teammates, the former players and people that I've gotten to know, you know, as being part of that program. People talk about the Carolina family. It really is real. It really is a special thing.
We're talking to Wes Miller. So, Wes, what were your biggest takeaways from being with Roy Williams in terms of being a head coach and how you run your program now?
Well, I think, you know, the foundation of kind of who I am as a coach, a lot of that is derived from, you know, things I gained and learned from coach. But, you know, from a style of play perspective, and I mean that just in terms of our approach for work ethic and the type of people we want in our program and, you know, the way we structure a practice, you know, that stuff's very similar, or if not just straight hijacked from coach's approach. But, you know, our style of play's really evolved and we don't play quite like they do anymore. And when we first started out, we did. I think we just kind of had to figure out who we are and, you know, who UNCG basketball is. And we've had a lot more success as we've kind of gotten away from that.
UNCG going up against Gonzaga on Thursday. They're going to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2001. Their head coach, the SoCon Coach of the Year, for the second time this season, Wes Miller. Wes, great to have you on the show. I know it's an amazing opportunity for you, your staff, your program. I'll be looking forward to seeing that on Thursday. Thank you very much, and good luck to you, Wes.
Hey, we're thrilled. Thanks for having me. This is neat for me because I grew up watching you and stuff, like listening to you and watching you. So thanks for making me feel good and being on the show today.
Tommy in North Carolina. It's good to have you, Tommy. What's up?
Hey, Jim. How you doing, man?
Good, good. You?
Good, good. That was a great interview with Wes Killer. Good luck against Gonzaga. Anyway, I'm looking to rip a Goldman ticket, so thanks for the vein. I'm going to take your advice. The captain.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Slash in Brentwood. Slash, good morning. What's up?
Hey, Jim Rome. It's Slash from Brentwood. Thanks for the vine, brother.
You got it, Slash. What's up?
Jim, I know you don't have a take, hypothetically speaking, on if I did it, but the only thing worse than watching Selection Sunday last night was hearing the Juice describe Chapter 6, also known as the night in question. I mean, seriously, Snags, between Greg Gumbel, Ernie Johnson, and Chuck absolutely murdering what is supposed to be one of the best nights of the year, and flipping over to see Orenthal talk about June 12, 1994, back-to-back, I blacked out. And, Jim, I don't black out often, but usually when I do, I wake up covered in Ron and Nicole's blood.
That's not a good call. No.
Oh, I get it now.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I didn't understand it at first, but now I know what that guy did. Why not go to the great state of Maine? Mitzi is in Maine. Mitzi, good afternoon. Nice to have you.
Good to speak to you. I'm a lady clone, and this is my first time to call you, and you're on my bucket list of things to do, and tomorrow's my birthday. So I wanted to share with you a quick little story about the second or third time that I met Dan Marino, 2 years after he moved to Miami to play for the Dolphins. And it was a Sunday morning. I was working as a caterer at the Miami Children's Hospital, where Dan Marino currently has a foundation down in Miami, Florida. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I put 75 cents into the newspaper stand at the Miami Children's Hospital to get out a newspaper. So So I'm leaning over, and I'm getting the newspaper, and I'm pulling it out, and I'm looking at the front page. Well, I have a friend who's standing behind me, and she's coughing, and she's trying to get my attention, but I didn't know that. I didn't realize it. So as I'm pulling out the paper, a hand reaches across from the opposite side of me and takes a newspaper without paying for it. So I look up to see what fool was doing that, and I looked into the big blue eyes of Dan Marino. And I said, oh, hi, Mr. Marino. Can I pay for the newspaper for you?
Mitzi. Then what happened, Mitzi? What did he say?
So he didn't say anything. He just kind of took it, and he had his hands on a breakfast tray, which he was carrying down to the hospital to a room because his son, Michael, had pneumonia, actually. So he walked down the hallway. He was out of sight, and we were
Missy,
walking
was it,
back.
Was it the Miami Herald? What newspaper was it?
Breakfast. And Dan came all the way back, and he said, would you like to have my autograph? I said, yes. So I have three autographs of Dan Marino. I've got...
Mitzi, this is getting better. I got to jump in, Mitzi. Hold on. Pick her up, Adam. I don't want to hang up on Mitzi. Wow, that is some story. How about that? So Mitzi goes to get a newspaper. How old school is this? People used to buy newspapers out of newspaper stands or boxes. You remember you drop the quarters in there and grab a newspaper. And again, you were supposed to do that on good faith, that you would only take one, right? You don't go in there and take four or five. Or in the case of Dan Marino, if this is true, you don't hide around the corner and wait for somebody like Mitzi to drop a few quarters in there so you can get a free newspaper. There you go, clones. Monday in the books, and I will be right back here, of course, tomorrow. I'll see you then. We're out.